It's time for Talking Picks with the one, the only, Perry Seibert from the Michigan Movie Critics Guild. He's been doing the movie reviews on the Lucianne Lantz Show for 28 years, and we are so glad because he loves the movies and we love hearing about them. Perry, it's been a great ride, hasn't it, Ben?
It's been wonderful. I think we're closing in. Literally, I think it'll be 28 years in just a couple of weeks.
Ooh.
If I remember correctly. Yes.
Well, happy anniversary, my friend. All right. The movie today is The Smashing Machine. And I have to tell you, when I watched the trailer, at first I thought I wasn't going to like this because of the topic, the fights and the fight scenes and all of that. But there is a good story. It is an emotional ride, it seems like, in this movie.
Yes, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? It's Oscar bait. That's right. Dwayne Johnson is playing a man named Mark Kerr, one of the first American mixed martial arts fighters in this fiction film that's strongly based on a documentary that was actually made about Mark Kerr about 20 years ago.
Probably looking at my eyes.
How'd that happen?
Well, have you ever heard of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the UFC?
That's the bloody thing they're trying to ban.
Right now. This guy is the best he has ever seen.
Do you hate each other when you fight?
Absolutely not.
I love that line. Do you hate each other when you fight? And he says, absolutely not. But by all accounts, watching it, it sure seems like they do.
Yes. So Mark Kerr was this figure who began doing mixed martial arts in the early 80s. I forget the time period the film takes place in. It's short. It's right about in there. And he was this figure that was just the kindest, most selfless, gentle, calm, huge hulking dude. He was a wrestler. He was a real wrestler, mm-hmm. a professional wrestler. Not that those aren't real wrestlers. You know what I'm saying? Who needed money and fell into doing this. And the thing about Kerr was that he was this gentle giant outside of the fighting. And as soon as he fought, and he talks about it, he talked about it extensively in the documentary, and they repurposed exact things he said for the movie. He was a completely different person in the ring, and he did anything to win, and he responded to the sheer sort of core brutality of it all and would not lose and would describe doing awful, awful things to people, because this is not mixed martial arts as you might be thinking of it in the octagon these days. Mm-hmm. This is like they did this in Brazil, and there were literally like no rules. You could do anything to anybody at any point.
No rules?
And
wow.
No rules, really. Very few rules, if any. And so it was even more brutal than you are probably imagining. Hmm. The movie very smartly avoids being overly brutal like this. It's not that kind of endurance test. It's not, ooh, can you need to experience this gore? It's not a gory film. Physically. Emotionally, it's not easy. And I think that's what drew Dwayne Johnson to the project in the first place. This is very much his project. He wanted to do this movie. He brought along Benny Safdie of the Safdie brothers to direct his first. Benny's never directed without his brother before, and now he has. Brought Benny Safdie along. I think he brought, Emily Blunt aboard, who plays the girlfriend. That's really the way to describe it, the girlfriend. And here's the thing about the movie, Lucianne. I have this pet peeve where I truly believe that a really good documentary is not a proof of concept for a feature. I have seen so many of these now, of features that get made from documentaries, both well-known ones and not so well-known ones. This is exactly a world-famous documentary. But I think it's almost always a bad idea. It never seems to work. Never have these films been as good as the documentary, because mm-hmm. it's just more interesting. And while this film weirdly leans in to acknowledging that, which seems like a good idea, but isn't, because I'm constantly reminded that you're telling me that this is real life and how it really was, but I know it's not, because that's Dwayne Johnson. You're losing me by doing this. And it's a film that ends up being very confused about where it actually wants to be, other than an example of this very interesting person, which might be enough, except that it ends with that classic biopic trope of it's suddenly like 20, it's 2009. We cut to 2009 at the end. And Mark Kerr is just buying groceries at his store, his local grocery store. And like he walks back to his truck and somebody from the neighborhood just waves and says, hi. And it says, we get words up on the screen that say something like, MMA fighters now make millions of dollars. Mark Kerr was one of the first to ever do it. And it's like, I don't care.
Well, I was going to ask you, what makes his so it's like, what makes his story
so what?
what makes his story so special? I don't understand. Other than that, right. you characterized him as a exactly. gentle giant, but when he got in the ring, he got, you know, ferocious. Other than that, where's the story here then? Because I'm watching this play
right.
out. On
I agree.
Okay, but I'm watching it play out on the trailer, and it looked a little bit more exciting. You had the dynamic of the girlfriend, Emily Blunt, in this, and she seemed very invested in him and trying to help him. You have him, you know, that scene that we just saw in the beginning there was him in a waiting room somewhere and the ladies asking about his eyes because they were all, yes. you know, beat up. And so he's explaining it to her, but
yes, very politely.
Right. Yes. And I thought, yeah, that was interesting. He didn't, you know, you'd yes. expect it to be like a gruff, like a, what do you care or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Other than all of that, where's the story here?
Yeah, there's not. There is him doing these couple of tournaments and the very, very dysfunctional relationship he has with the girlfriend, which is interesting, but does it go anywhere? In fact, it's undercut by this thing at the very end of the movie, which I don't wish to wreck. I don't think it's a spoiler, but even that relationship ends in a way that's like, oh, okay. Like it doesn't, there's no payoff, which I don't ask for, I don't require, other than, especially if you're going to show me real life, real mm-hmm. life doesn't have a payoff, that's mm-hmm. fine. It made me want to see the documentary, is what the movie
yeah,
made me
right.
want to do. It didn't make me want to see the movie again or tell other people to see the movie. It made me say, oh, what? I wonder what the documentary is like. I'd like to see more of what he actually was, not just a decent performance. And again, I want to say, it's not a bad performances by anybody here. This really is Dwayne Johnson trying to get an Oscar nomination. I am not joking with that intro. That is very much what this is. He felt he could really do something different here. And he does. This is not how we've ever seen Dwayne Johnson on screen before. Great.
Is he doing the fight scenes? Is Dwayne doing the
– Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. But the fight scenes, again, are – I don't know if you've ever watched an MMA fight. I don't like it only – not only. I don't like it because it's boring to me. Suddenly they end up on the ground and somebody quits. I don't understand what has happened as opposed to boxing, which makes complete sense to me. I can see it. Yeah. I know what's happening.
Right.
And so that's basically what happens here. Like he gets somebody down and then squeezes them and bends them until they quit. Like that's not the most exciting thing to see visually. So you got to dress it up with this other stuff, which is this very interesting story about, you know, he's got drug problems. Of course, how could you not if you're suffering in complete and total pain from having done this
right.
over and over and over in your life? But we've seen those addiction stories. And while, yes, it's kind of interesting that this one doesn't bother to shape a traditional arc out of it, it doesn't go anywhere that's terribly interesting. I sat here watching the whole time going, I'm waiting for this movie to start. Like I understand what's going on and I don't dislike it, but I'm still waiting for it to start. And even the stuff with the Emily Blunt character gets weird because she's very volatile. And for reasons that make sense and for reasons that seem completely out of place, that neither of them seem terribly stable. And she like appears and disappears without explanation. Like they have this huge fight and then suddenly she'll just be there again. I'm like, well, see, so it's not really about their relationship because they don't get back to the scene where they kind of patch it up and get back together. So I don't know what this movie is other than Dwayne Johnson trying to get an Oscar.
All right. Movie. The movie is The Smashing Machine. A documentary by that same title was done by HBO. So I don't even know if the documentary would be interesting at this point. But was the reason that one was done on him because he truly was the first to make money doing this?
One of the very first Americans to do it. Absolutely.
Okay.
And that documentary was done in 2003, where this was just when MMA was sort of, you know, cresting.
Yeah.
Like it was just catching on. So people were finding out about this history.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, Lucien, if this movie sounds at all interesting to you, by all means, you know, I'm not going to tell you not to see it. I don't think it's a terrible movie. But the movie it reminded me of was a movie that we talked about a couple years ago called The Iron Claw.
Oh,
about
yeah.
the Von Erich family, the professional wrestling family. Very similar movie. Another a very similar story, a very you know, tragic personal story.
Yeah.
But that's a movie that figured out how to actually have an arc
mm-hmm.
and had multiple characters to engage with. That's a much more interesting version of this movie. That's the movie I kept thinking about and going, yeah, this is not as good as that movie. And that's always a terrible feeling. I hate thinking, oh, you're reminding me of this movie, and the movie's so much better. Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. It's just going to hurt you. I'm going to have to talk about this.
All right.
So, yeah.
Not too exciting. The Smashing Machine. But we do have something else to talk about, and that is because an actor came out of retirement. Who is it?
Oh, his second retirement from film alone. Daniel Day-Lewis is back for the first time in 8 years with a film called Anemone that is co-written by Daniel Day-Lewis and Ronan Day-Lewis, his son, who also directed the movie, which is why I'm sure he's come out of retirement, right?
Oh, that's sweet, though.
Why would you not do that? And look, I'm not telling anybody that they need to go see this movie other than if you care about acting and care about seeing one of the best people to ever do it come back and do it again after we were told he would never would. See it for that reason alone. See it for the Daniel Day-Lewis performance. It's a very slow, very – oh, see, so I don't know if you're aware, but do you know who Daniel Day-Lewis's spouse is?
No.
Rebecca Miller, the daughter of Arthur Miller. So this is being directed by Arthur Miller's grandson.
Oh, okay, okay.
and it's fun to watch the stuff that is very cinematic and the stuff that is obviously – bred in him.
Wow. Like
there are three superb monologues in this movie. Day-Lewis gets two of them, obviously, that are worth the price of admission to the movie for me. I loved all three of them. Like, oh, that's just so good. That's just really good. That's amazing to watch. Samantha Morton is on board as the wife to Daniel Day-Lewis, who plays a former IRA soldier who has done enough damage to himself and to others that he lives a life of self-imposed guilt and horribleness in the woods in Northern Ireland. And it's about his brother coming and attempting to break through that and get him to join the living again.
Interesting name, Anemone, that movie, Anemone.
Yes, it has to do with mythology. There's a whole, if you want to dig deep, you can find out. The movie doesn't get into it, thankfully. It just sort of presents it, which I really like. I didn't know any of it during it. I went afterwards and went, okay, I see where they're drawing. I understand the tradition that they're drawing on to tell this story.
So it doesn't have anything to do with the buttercups in the field that he's living in.
Well, the flowers do. Yeah. The flowers are symbolic.
Okay.
So that is yes and no is the answer to that question.
Right.
Nothing literally in the movie, no. But do we see a lot of them? Yes. Anemone actually means wind, I found out. And boy, that made sense for a lot of shots in this movie. There's a lot of wind photography. There's a lot of things.
Anemone has multiple definitions. And because the first thing I thought was sea anemone in the sea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's where I went to. Being a Finding Nemo fan, how could you not?
Yeah, right.
But no, I went to, after watching it, I realized, well, it's not that. There's none of that here. It utterly, nobody went to either of these movies, Lucien. They both opened last weekend. No one went to them.
What does that tell you?
That tells me that they're films that were not easy to market in the first place. Look, nobody thought that Day-Lewis was going to make any money. This got made because Daniel Day-Lewis said, I will do this. And Focus Features, who's one of the best American indie companies for now 2 decades, if not three,
mm-hmm.
More than happy to do Daniel Day-Lewis a favor and release this. It couldn't have cost very much money, I would imagine. Smashing Machine, I think people had some actual hopes for. You could sort of sell that with Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. But in this capacity, can you? And so will he ever get another chance to do this? I don't know. Not at this budget.
Why?
But I would love, you know, and that's why if you're interested, see, you know, as much as I dumped on it, I don't think it's a terrible movie.
Okay,
I
just all right. think it's very so why good, did Daniel?
But nothing about the performance is too bad.
All right. But why did Daniel Day-Lewis step out of the arena? How many years ago was that? 7 years
Look,
ago?
Look, he's eight. Phantom Thread was his last movie, which I think 2017 or 2018.
Okay.
It's been a long time. And he did this before. Back in the early 90s, he quit and then stayed away, became a cobbler, if we remember correctly, and stayed away for another, I think it was 7 or 8 years.
A cobbler, a shoemaker?
It was Gangs of New York.
A shoemaker?
Yeah.
He became
he decided to learn how to make shoes. And so he was making shoes.
What?
Look, he's an odd bird, man. I love Daniel Day-Lewis to death, but it is – he's one of those guys who – and they're guys who talk about it like this. It is emotionally and physically hard on them to act. They just can't do it after a while. Uh-huh. He had to quit his Hamlet. He had a supposedly gobsmacking Hamlet and could only do it for like a few weeks because he was going to kill himself.
Oh,
like, he could not – to put himself in the state he needed to be in to do this
mm-hmm. –
he could not keep that up and live a normal existence. So he fled from playing Hamlet on stage, where he was doing it brilliantly by all accounts. This is hard. If you work with the amount of focus that he supposedly works with, and I don't know why I'm saying supposedly, only because I haven't seen it in person. I know people who've seen it in person who say, oh, it's real. It's absolutely real. It's complete and total focus all of the time. That's exhausting. I don't know how you – I don't know how anyone can do that for – 4 months to make a movie and not have it affect them.
When they stay away that long and then all of a sudden I see them again, he doesn't look like the Daniel Day-Lewis with the longish dark hair. He now is all balding and silver in his – he looks totally different.
He was silvery before he retired the last time. You could see it starting. Mm. This is also a part where he's playing somebody, you know, older.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what he really looks like. Mm. I know what the characters look like. Here's my favorite Daniel Day-Lewis fact, that he grew up he's not Rada. He's lower tier in the history of UK acting educations. And so that's him right now.
That's showing you a picture. Yeah. Much older than I remember.
He looks like your assistant principal now. Yes.
Yes.
He grew up wanting to act because of the 70s American movies, and he dreamed to work for Scorsese. And Scorsese calls him to do Age of Innocence, where he's supposed to play a repressed Brit. And he was so sad that he had to do that. He was happy to do it, but was so sad that he had to play that part. So he was so happy to come out of retirement so many years later when he called to play, come play Bill the Butcher in Gangs of New York. be a psychotic bad guy for me. And he was like, yes, I'm in. And I also love that Daniel Day-Lewis, being Daniel Day-Lewis, is the only person who's worked with Scorsese ever and loves him who refers to him as Martin. Never Marty. Everybody else calls him Marty. He's Martin to Daniel Day-Lewis.
Very interesting. Two movies, and we'll let our listeners make up their minds whether they want to see them or not, knowing what Perry had said about them.
They will be streaming shortly based on their box office totals over the weekend.
Is that how that works?
But they're in theaters now.
All right.
Go now if you can and want to.
All right. The first one, Smashing Pumpkins, and the one we were just talking about regarding
Daniel Day-Lewis. Smashing Machine.
Oh.
The Smashing Machine.
The Smashing Machine.
It is not the Billy Corgan biopic. No. It is a different biopic.
Slip of the tongue.
I would love to watch Mark Kerr and Billy Corgan in an octagon because, oh, my God. Gosh, do I dislike Billy Corgan.
Now there's a movie. And the other one, Daniel Day-Lewis in, what was his name?
Anemone.
Thank you so much. Perry Seibert, the one and the only. From the Michigan Movie Critics Guild on the Lucy Ann Lantz Show, Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.